Hare Krishna. So today is October the 3rd, 2007. The flood is gradually going down. Okay. So yesterday we spoke a bit about touring and chanting with Prabhupada. Different airports, and we ended up at the Gita Pratishthan in Wardha. So a few little shorter sections here. This one is devotees chanting, not just Prabhupada. One good example of a very good kirtan leader at that time was Jai Satchinandana Prabhu. He was quite famous in ISKCON. He sounded exactly like a Bengali. And he was quite fluent in Bengali, actually, as well. So on November the 29th, 1976, one of our American devotees, Jai Satchinandan Prabhu, has released a really beautiful bhajan tape called Gandhava Loka. All of our song tapes, apart from Srila Prabhupada's, of all our song tapes, this is probably the best yet. His singing is flawless, and his pronunciation of Bengali and Sanskrit is like a native speaker's, and the music is heavenly. I played it on my tape recorder during Prabhupada's lunch one day. Prabhupada was in his prasadam room eating as the sounds wafted in from my servant's room. He called me in and asked me what the music was. When I informed him, he tipped his head from side to side in approval. Oh, very nice. And then when Bhagatji came in from the kitchen with his last chapati for Prabhupada, it caught his attention too. He was surprised when Prabhupada told him with pleasure that it was one of his American disciples. Achcha, he sounds just like a Bengali. But the next day when I played it again, thinking that Prabhupada would like it, he called me in and told me to turn it off. So once was enough. But he really liked it. And for those of you that don't know, Bhagatji was a local man. I guess he was in his late 50s in those days. And he was one of the few local people that came forward to help Srila Prabhupada establish ISKCON in Vrindavan. He lived literally next door to the temple in Ramanreti, just round the corner. And he donated the land that our Gurukul there stands on now. And he also gave 1 lakh of rupees, which was a lot of money in those days, to go towards the cost of building that Gurukul. And not only that, he also got quite intimately involved with the management of the temple there for quite a few years, both when Prabhupada was still with us and afterwards. So he did a huge amount of service for ISKCON, actually. Very, very nice person. And he was one of those gentlemen that was, you know, really always jovial and friendly. Never had a bad word to say about anybody, and always knew what to do in practically every circumstance. So, he used to cook for Prabhupada every day as well. He was very expert at making what he called his breads. It means big, thick chapatis. Very thick, but they were very easy to eat and digest.
Is he still
alive today? No, Bhagatji died. He must have left his body 20 years ago now, I think. Long time ago. He sold his house to originally to Tosan Krishna and Kirti Raj. Then later on, Tosan sold his half onto a lady from New York, who I think has still got it. Okay, so Jai Satchinandan, then he was a very good kirtan man. So on June the 4th, 1976, in the evening, this is in Los Angeles, Jai Satchinandana, who had translated Prabhupada's Bengali poem, Makine Bhagavat Dharma, sang it for him in his darshan room. He played the harmonium and we accompanied him on kartals and mridanga while Prabhupada listened. Jai Sachinandan sings just like a Bengali kirtaniya, very melodiously and with all the right accents. Prabhupada liked his rendition, but he declined to sing it himself, preferring to hear his disciple. He was pleased to hear that Jai Sachinandan has learned Bengali, and he requested him to start a Bengali BTG with Jagannath Das. And in fact, at the end of the year, he did come to India, and he was resident here in Mayapur, I think for a couple of years. And then he got married, and then he went back to the West again. Prabhupada was quite pleased with him, but there was one occasion when he wasn't so pleased with him. This was on December the 12th, 1975. During Prabhupada's massage, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he heard a letter from Jai Sachinandan Das in Los Angeles, written on behalf of a group of brahmacharis. In every ISKCON temple in the world, the assembled devotees offer their obeisances to the deities in the morning as the Govinda prayers loudly play. George Harrison recorded it and Jamuna Dasi sings the mantras. Disturbed by this custom, Jai Sachinandan quoted Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well as Srila Prabhupada that if a brahmachari hears and is attracted to a woman singing, it is a subtle fall down. In light of this, he wrote, many of the brahmacharis approached the temple president to see if it would be possible that when the deities are greeted in the morning, that instead of listening to Gurudas Maharaj's former wife, he couldn't even say her name, singing the Brahma Samhita prayers, we could listen to your divine grace instead, rather than hear a woman sing. He did not want to change the tape because it has been a standard thing in ISKCON since 1970. So, requested by many devotees, I am inquiring from your divine grace if we could play a tape recording of you singing instead of a woman when the deities of Rukmini Dwarkadish are greeted in the morning. I am sure that all the devotees would be enlivened to hear you instead of electric guitars, the London Symphonic Orchestra, etc., etc. Srila Prabhupada was not pleased. He said that constantly changing things is our Western disease. His reply was short and direct. No. You have made some discovery. All along you have been hearing the recording of Jamuna Dasi, and now you want to change. It is not ordinary singing. It is concert. Many people are singing, so it is not bad. Just like Sankirtan, many voices are there, men and women. So it is the same thing, Sankirtan. I approve of it. Here in the Krishna Balaram temple, we are hearing the same recording every morning. So if it is good here, why not there? So I think that was the last time that topic was brought up. Okay, some other chanting that was going on in Vrindavan later in the year, 1976, because Prabhupada arrived there right at the beginning of September, and he stayed through till the end of November, so 3 months, except for a 2-week gap when he went to Aligarh, Delhi and Chandigarh for some pandals, but the rest of the time he was just there in Vrindavan. So on October the 27th, Prabhupada was sitting at his desk putting on his tilak in preparation for his walk this morning when he heard the loud and melodious chanting of the Brahma Samhita prayers coming from the deity room, which is just adjacent to his house. On inquiring who was responsible, he was informed by Akshayananda Swami that it was Yashodhanandan Swami, who had learnt the prayers and that particular melody while on tour in South India. So, what we call the Brahma Samhita tune, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, that tune was picked up by Yashodhanandan Swami in South India, and then he and Achyutananda Swami made a tape in 76 and it was distributed, and that's how that tune actually came out. Otherwise, before about 76, hardly anybody knew that tune. So he had started chanting those prayers in the mornings. He goes into the deity room every day and chants the shlokas while the deities have been dressed. Prabhupada was so pleased that he asked Yashodananda not only to continue with it every morning, but also to train some of the Gurukul boys as well. And so he duly did that. So that was 27th of October. November the 5th, 1976, a week later, Prabhupada was discussing about the Gurukul training. And he had a long conversation with Jagadish about the standards that he wanted in the Vrindavan Gurukul. So he was also concerned that the younger boys not be forced to do long periods of chanting japa, it being too difficult for them. Instead, he said, they could be engaged in regular kirtan chanting. He was satisfied, however, with Jagadish's clarification that the older boys between 13 and 15 years, some of whom are initiated, chant 16 rounds, while the younger boys may do only 8 or 6, and the rest of the time they study. And Prabhupada made the point, if you force children to chant, they'll get a very bad taste for it, and then later on they'll reject Krishna consciousness because of it. So you can't force them, they have to do it naturally, like that. So when Jagadish mentioned that some of the boys were going into the deity room as the deities were being bathed to chant mantras from the Brahma Samhita and the Sri Upanishad with Yashodanandan Maharaj, Prabhupada objected. Why? Why? Deity room? Within the deity room there is no need of chanting. Who told you this? There is no need. Within the deity room? He looked questioningly at Pradyumna Prabhu. You told? No, Pradyumna responded. But then he added, well, sometimes I thought you said that for installation or at other times when the deity is being bathed to chant the Brahma Samhita prayers. No, within the deity room there is no business, Prabhupada told him. No business. Jagadish told him that in the early morning when we hear the sounds of the boys chanting, it is coming from the deity room. Oh, Prabhupada responded. They can chant outside, yes. The deity bathing or whatever, dressing, that may go on. You can chant not within the deity room, that you can do outside. So they made that adjustment. So that was at the beginning of October. And then at the end of October, Yashodanandan had taught them some other things to chant as well. So in the class, Prabhupada was saying about the opportunity that we have for developing Krishna consciousness. So his attempt to provide the best possible opportunity to those pious souls who have been given the connection to Krishna through birth is displayed in his ongoing concern for the development of the Gurukul. Surveying the young boys sitting attentively before him, he explained, they are ringing the kartals, chanting, dancing, offering obeisances to the Lord. Temple atmosphere. So don't think it is an ordinary opportunity. It is a very great opportunity. From the very beginning of life, they are getting impression, bhakti yoga. Vasudeva, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga. So these are not going in vain. Even a child is playing kartal, imitation. Not imitation. He is given the chance. He was previously Vaishnav. So somehow or another he could not make his life perfect. And therefore he is given again chance. So naturally he has got some tendency to play the kartal, to offer flower here, to offer obeisances. They take pleasure. So it is due to the previous life, yoga. But it was not perfectly done, so somehow or another, they are getting the chance from the very beginning of life. And where better than Krishna's own abode to train them? Prabhupada's plan is for an international school here in the Holy Dham is practical both materially, because it is much cheaper here in India, and spiritually. This is the ultimate goal, Prabhupada said. You have to come to this stage, Vasudevam Sarvamiti, fully, firmly convinced that Vasudeva is my life. Vasudeva is everything. Krishna is my life. And the highest perfection is visible in the Vrindavan atmosphere, especially by the gopis. Everyone in Vrindavan, even the trees and plants, even the grains of sand, everyone is attached to Krishna. That is Vrindavan. So not all of a sudden that we can get that higher stage of Vrindavan attachment. But still, wherever we stay, if we practice this bhakti yoga as we are preaching, so it is becoming successful. People are taking. Those who were so-called malachas and yavanas, they are also taking Vasudeva. Their love for Krishna is increasing. So that is natural. Any other so-called religious system, that is avidya, it will keep you in ignorance. There is no light. And the Vedic injunction is, don't keep yourself in the darkness of ignorance. Tamasi ma jyoti gama. That jyoti means to love Krishna. And loving affairs of Krishna is in the spiritual world. That is jyoti. Jyoti maya dham. Self-effulgent. Concluding, Prabhupada emphasized the process of hearing and chanting and the need to be seriously engaged in our task. If you hear regularly Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore we are stressing, always hear, always read, always hear. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nitya. If you can constantly, 24 hours, hear and chant. Hear means somebody chants, or you chant yourself, or hear. Or some of your colleague may chant, and you hear. Or he may hear, and you may chant. So this process must go on. Not any other nonsense talks, gossiping. Simply hear and chant. Then, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna. If you are seriously hearing and chanting, seriously, yes, this is life. I shall engage only for increasing my love for Vasudeva. If you are determined, then it can be done. There is no difficulty. And as soon as you do this, you will increase fully your love for Vasudeva, and then there is no more chance of contacting this material body. So then a few days later, on November the 12th, there are now about 20 boys in the Gurukul. Their attendance at the full morning program has livened things up, especially during Prabhupada's Gurupooch. When Prabhupada sits on his Vyasasan after greeting the deities, they all dance and chant with great enthusiasm along with the temple devotees as Prabhupada smiles approvingly. He had actually complained to the teachers when the boys had first arrived that they were dull and not dancing much in the kirtan. He took it as an indication that the teaching was deficient. There is no life, he had told Jagadish. But now they dance with abandon, grinning and jumping and scrambling for the flowers that Prabhupada showers over their heads as the kirtan reaches its climax. At the end, they bow down as Prabhupada recites the Premadwani prayers, and then they sit attentively as he gives his lecture. So 10 days later, on the 22nd of November, Prabhupada brought his class to a close. I moved forward to remove his spectacles, his Srimad Bhagavatam, and the tape recorder microphone. As I did so, Yashoda Nandan Maharaj and the Gurukul boys moved forward to the Vyasasan, lining up in front of Srila Prabhupada with their palms together in traditional pranams. They broke out into a loud chorus, chanting in rhythmic unison three mantras. Krishnaika Cheta Madamoha Vinasakarin Madrishti Gochara Prabho Prabhupada Swamin Dosha Bivritti Paradushita Manda Buddhe Sanchintayami Charano Tava Bhakti Heto. O Lord, O Prabhupada, may you always be the object of my vision. Only the name of Krishna can destroy my pride and illusion. Although my mind and intelligence are contaminated by wicked inclinations, I meditate upon your lotus feet in causeless devotion. Vrindavane ramanareti prasida bhumau tatrapi krishna balarama supadamule gyanam param parama krishna sudamit yuktam dantastu deva prabhupad namo namaste. In the most holy land of Vrindavan, in Ramanreti, at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna Balaram, you are preaching the topmost knowledge of the Supreme Personality, Lord Krishna, who is the fountainhead of religion. O Master of the Senses, O my Lord Srila Prabhupada, let me offer my humble obeisances to you. Maduram maduram vapurasya vibho, maduram maduram vadanam maduram, madugandhi mridu smritam etadaho, maduram 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 maduram. O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body. But his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. So the first two were written by Anantaram Shastri, the Indian devotee scholar, earlier this year. He had written three verses actually, but they only were singing two. The third is originally from the Krishna Karnamrita by Bilva Mangala Thakur and is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila, chapter 21, verse 136. So they were doing this every morning at the end of the class before Prabhupada got off the Vyasasana. They'd all line up and then they'd all start chanting these nice prayers to Prabhupada. Prabhupada sat and smiled broadly as the boys burst out at the end with enthusiastic cries of Jai Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada ki jai. He is very pleased that Yashodhanandan Swami has taken seriously his instructions to train the boys in the chanting of mantras. And this first product of his efforts is now a wonderful addition to the daily temple program. Many of the other devotees have also learnt the verses, and everyone loves hearing the vibrations resound transcendentally throughout the atmosphere in glorification of Krishna's pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada is highly gratified to see the young boys dancing and singing in the kirtans with great abandonment and enjoyment. So that was nice, the boys all chanting like that. Prabhupada approved it very much. Okay, so that's a few things about actual chanting. Now a few bits and pieces about the efficacy of chanting, the benefit that we get from doing it. This was on March the 30th, 1976 in Aligarh. Prabhupada had gone there just for one day and he had a pandal in the evening. It was a well attended pandal, about 7,000 people came. And of course there was also a lot of Western devotees there, because it was in between the Mayapur and Vrindavan legs of the Gopurnima festival. So there were at least a couple of hundred Western devotees there all chanting. So in the evening, a large pandal program was held on the Government of India Press Colony grounds just off Maris Road. The crowd numbered some 7,000 people, an excellent turnout. The devotees had already been chanting for at least half an hour when Prabhupada arrived, and the audience was eager to hear him. Clearly it was a special event for them to see so many Westerners chanting and to meet the personality who has inspired them to do so. Prabhupada was given a vote of thanks by the head of the nearby Ram Tirtha Mission, who had helped to organize the pandal on just a few days' notice. Prabhupada was noticeably pleased with the program and he gave a splendid lecture about the value of chanting Hare Krishna. He quoted a statement from Shastra that there was no amount of sin that could not be eradicated by the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. So unfortunately that lecture wasn't recorded. Pushta Krishna Maharaj was just new on Prabhupada's party as his secretary, and at that time he was responsible for recording, and for some reason or another he just never recorded it. But the whole lecture was just about, you know, the value of chanting Hare Krishna. So anyway, later on, again, Prabhupada mentioned this point about chanting destroys all sins. This was on November the 14th, 1976 in Vrindavan. Exactly a year, as it happens, before Prabhupada's disappearance. Prabhupada quoted Lochan Das Thakur, and he told us that the chanting of the Lord's names was the potent remedy for all of our problems. Vishaya Charya Se Rasa Majya Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari. This is the instruction, that we can chant the Maha Mantra, we can chant the holy names of the Lord purely without offense. Because if we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra once only, if it is pure, then immediately you become liberated. Harinam is so powerful that once chanting, immediately vanquishes the accumulated sinful reaction of millions of lives. Papi haya tata papa karibare. Every papi, sinful man, is very expert in committing sinful activities. But Harinam is so expert that once chanted, the papi, the sinful man, will be failure to commit sin anymore. Prabhupada had a nice way of phrasing things. However, he cautioned us that chanting is not a cheap process. But the difficulty is that we cannot come to this pure stage of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Due to our past habits, our mind is disturbed. We cannot concentrate. Therefore, we have fixed up the minimum. We cannot imitate Haridas Thakur. That is not possible. If somebody imitates Haridas Thakur, so we can see this, chanting Hare Krishna and smoking bidis. So we can understand what is the position. The offense is going on. Therefore, we should try to avoid the 10 offenses. Of course, in the beginning, the offenses will continue. But chanting, 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 as soon as we become purified, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Maha Devagani Nivapanam. By chanting, chanting, chanting repeatedly, the core of the heart will be cleansed. Later on in 1977, Rameshwara came, and he was Prabhupada's secretary for about 3 weeks in January. So he arrived just before we were going to the Kumbh Mela at Allahabad, and then from there we came to Calcutta, then we went down to Bhubaneswar. So whilst we were in Calcutta on January the 18th, we had driven out to go for a walk in a park. Then on the way back, Rameshwara asked some questions about the efficacy of chanting the holy names. And Prabhupada confirmed that if one chants even once only the name of Krishna, all of his sinful reactions are completely eradicated. And then he added, but the problem is that they again commit their sinful activities and again accumulate. So, you get some. It's like when they go to the Rathiatra festivals. If you just walk in front of Lord Jagannath or behind, then you're immediately liberated. But the problem is that everybody goes off and then again they do all their sinful activities. They get more contaminated. So that was a theme that Prabhupada used to bring up fairly regularly. So on March the 19th, 1976, here in Mayapur, Prabhupada had just initiated maybe 200 devotees. So Prabhupada reminded his initiates, new initiates, and all of us in class about the good opportunity that he has given us through initiation to cross over to the other side of the river of death. Prabhupada especially stressed that we should not fall back. We finish all the resultant action of contamination of this material life, provided we remain without being fallen again. Therefore, there is dasavida namaparad. You know these 10 kinds of offenses. So if you chant Hare Krishna mantra, being careful not to commit the 10 kinds of offenses, then you are immediately liberated. The most dangerous offense is if we think that I am so fortunate. I've got this Harinam and it can vanquish all kinds of sinful reaction. So a very good instrument. So I can go on committing all kinds of sinful activities and chant Hare Krishna. Then it will be neutralized. So this is the most dangerous offense. Namnad balad yasha hi papa buddhi. Because I know that by chanting Hare Krishna, I shall be freed from all resultant sinful reactions. So let me go on. And then throughout the whole day, I shall commit all kinds of sinful activities. And in the evening, I shall chant Hare Krishna. And then everything will be finished. This rascaldom is very, very dangerous. So we must be very careful. Don't take the Hare Krishna mantra as an instrument to neutralize your sinful activities. It is a fact that as soon as you are initiated with the Hare Krishna mantra, you become free. But don't commit it again. So in other words, chanting Hare Krishna does free us from all our sinful reactions. But that's not why we chant. That's a side effect that you get freed from your sinful reactions. The real purpose of chanting Hare Krishna is to develop love for Krishna, to enter into his service. It's not that, you know, now I can get freed from all the sinful reactions and then now I'm freed, I can go and do them all over again. So again, on May the 15th, 1976, class was on one of Prabhupada's most quoted Srimad Bhagavatam verses, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Verse 15. It describes that ultimately, only by the performance of Kevala Bhakti, pure unalloyed devotional service to Krishna, can the weeds of sinful reactions be destroyed without any possibility of their arising again. Niharameva Bhaskara, Prabhupada quoted, just as the sun dissipates the fog. He told us that simply countering one type of karma with another type of karma will not help. It is only when we are engaged in unmotivated service to Lord Krishna that we get the chance to become perfect and free. If you simply hear and chant, he said, then you will be purified. As if in answer to any doubt as to whether this alone is sufficient, he assured us that it was. If you argue that, oh, somebody is hearing for so many years, so there is a question of offense, 10 kinds of offense. So even if one is in offense, still, if he continues hearing and chanting, he will be purified. It is such a nice thing. This is Kevala Bhakti. So that's a good point Prabhupada made there, that sometimes people say, well, I've been chanting for so many years and nothing's happening. So then Prabhupada's saying, so the question is, are you actually avoiding the 10 offenses? Then you can talk about real chanting. But if you're doing chanting and committing offenses, then you won't make any, or your progress won't be much. But still, even if you're doing that, you have to keep on chanting. And eventually, you'll get there. So, chanting makes you all good. June the 21st, 1976, Prabhupada was in Toronto, and he was out on a morning walk. So there were one or two Indian gentlemen, kind of like life members and supporters. They'd become associated with the temple, they were involved a little bit. So then, on the morning walk, one or two of them, they voiced some doubts that they had developed from having close association with the Western devotees. Of course, you know, our Western devotees, they're always very enthusiastic, but not necessarily perfect in the culture, you know. And of course, Indian people, they have their culture, although they didn't necessarily have the chanting of the holy names. So there was a kind of a blending there, you know, with these Western boys that were just fanatically, you know, book distributors, chanters like this, but weren't very cultured. And then the cultured Indian gentlemen that weren't necessarily, you know, committed to the chanting so much. So as we were walking along, Mr. Sharma began to reveal his doubt. But Prabhu, how far is it fair that if one is religious, say chanting and regulations and everything he's doing, but then on the other hand, he doesn't behave as a good, honest labor? That good, honest, you have got some idea of good, honest, Prabhupada said. But because he is chanting, he is all good. So he was kind of criticizing, he's not, you know, working nicely, but if he's chanting, he's all good. The devotees responded enthusiastically to Prabhupada's support. Jai! Many Indians are willing to offer their services because they can see the devotees engage seriously in spiritual practices, which they can identify with as part of their own original culture. However, they don't often fully appreciate the practical effects of devotional life. Due to a lack of transcendental vision, they can hardly glimpse the true potency of the holy name and its purifying effects. Coupled with close association with devotees, this sometimes develops into doubts in either the devotees themselves or in the process. One of the other guests raised this issue. Prabhupada, because he's chanting, sometimes a person gets very false ego that, oh, he's become a very big devotee. He's serving the Lord. And then he tries to... Prabhupada, stop for a moment. That's all right. He's in the line of goodness. but those who are not chanting, they're all bad. Do you understand it or not? Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna. One who is not a devotee of the Lord, he has no good qualification. You may propose that, oh, I am so much good, I am this, I am that, but it is all bogus thing. Mano Ratenasati Bhavato Bahi. He is simply concocting in the mind. And so far a devotee is concerned, even if you find some defect, he is a sadhu. Sadhu Reva Samantavya. Now I find some defective state. No, Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. These defects will be out very soon. So don't bother. But because he is a devotee, he is a sadhu. So you mean to say, Prabhu, Mr. Sharma asked, truthfulness and honesty will come after chanting, chanting, chanting? Prabhupada agreed. But those who are not devotees, he said, there is no truthfulness at all. Here has begun truthfulness. But one who is not a devotee, he has no question of truthfulness. He is simply concocting in the mind. Mano retainer. And because he's on the mental platform, he'll do all bad things. Therefore, devotees must try to be honest and truthful, Mr. Sharma said. Devotee becomes automatically, Prabhupada told him. If he sticks to the devotional principles, he'll become good very soon. Just like he is stopped. Devotee means, just like we say, no illicit sex, no drinking, no intoxication, no meat eating. So he has adopted this and chanting. That is perfect. So Prabhupada wouldn't hear any criticism of the devotees. Even if there is a defect, because he's chanting, he's perfect. That's all. He's a sadhu. But you may find somebody else you think is so perfect. But if he's not chanting, he's all bad. So that was always Prabhupada's reaction. When anybody... you know, challenged him or presented some bad news report, just like when we were down in South India at the beginning of 76. Some reports had come from Japan. Guru Kripa's party was there. And they were getting arrested and thrown out of the country, and so many different things were going on, and it came in the press in India. And some bad reports were there. So then Prabhupada got some news that some guru somewhere he had held up a copy of the press reports, and he was telling all his followers, just see, these ISKCON people, they're all bad, like black sheep, like this. So then Prabhupada was replying to that, you know, alright, you're complaining that we've done something in Japan. He said, at least we've done something. He said, what have you got in Japan? That's the first thing. At least he said, we've gone there and done something. So he wouldn't accept any criticism at all. He told him, he said, you tell that man, you were just, yes, you have seen this, this has come to your attention. Why has it come to your attention? Because you're just like a fly. Fly is always looking for some saw, for some stool. He said, that's why it's come to your attention. He said, otherwise, a devotee is always like a bumblebee. He only sees the nectar. Okay, chanting is a common platform for resolving conflicts. So this is another aspect of chanting that Prabhupada always stressed. Whenever there was some problem between devotees individually or collectively, Prabhupada always instructed them, you just get together and chant. That will solve all the problems. Yeah, if there was any fights going on between devotees, which there was quite often, Prabhupada would always tell them, you just go and chant together, that's all, and then you'll see all these so-called problems, they'll all just dissolve. So there were a couple of major conflicts in ISKCON during 75-76. One of them, of course, I've already mentioned a little bit about the group that left ISKCON in 1973. That was Siddhisrupananda's group in Hawaii. So they had left, but they continued to have some contact with Srila Prabhupada. But they didn't like being in the ISKCON structure. It was too difficult for them. And they were always criticizing the GBC as this and that, you know, whatever. So he liked to do his own thing. But he used to come here to the Mayapur festival. He came in 75, Siddhisrupa. And he also came in 76. So Prabhupada was trying to get, you know, some cooperation. And he was, you know, Siddhas Rupa had come on a morning walk. And so Prabhupada, in a mood of, you know, cooperation or trying to foster cooperation, Madhadvisa was there. He was the GBC for the South Seas at that time. So he said, if there's any differences, let's talk about it. Let's, you know, work it out. But as as they started, you know, Prabhupada asked Madhavisa, so what are the problems? So Madhavisa would say what our criticisms were. That. But what happened was that Siddhasarupa got really defensive. He just couldn't take Prabhupada's lead. And he just got really defensive and he got all agitated and emotional. The whole thing became very acrimonious, even with Prabhupada there personally. So it was, you know, it was difficult to work it out. So later on in the day then, I was giving Prabhupada his massage. So this was on March the 4th. So although between his disciples there seems to be major differences preventing cooperative action, Prabhupada smilingly gave his own perspective on the two camps. Of course, he said, I have my affection for them, meaning Siddhasarupa's group. I don't send them away, and they are coming to see me. So just like there are many, so many animals, so some of them are fiercer than the others. That was Prabhupada's perspective on us. There's so many animals, and some are a bit more fierce than the others. He also pointed out that they are coming to us, not us to them. Prabhupada always refers to ISKCON as us. He says that there are differences, just like there are between him and his own god brothers, but that we share a common platform of chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasadam. I mentioned that in New Zealand, our men discouraged Siddhasarupa's people from visiting the temple. But Prabhupada said, why? They can come. Our centers are only for this purpose, to chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam. Gradually they will come to some sense. So Prabhupada was hopeful about that, but actually that never happened. But anyway, so then later in the year, then we actually went to Hawaii. First of all, of course, we saw Tushta Krishna in Melbourne and then in Auckland. And then when we went to Hawaii, Siddhasarupa himself came to see Srila Prabhupada. So again, it was quite kind of disappointing and acrimonious. So this was on May the 9th, 1976. We were in Prabhupada's room in the late afternoon when Siddhasarupa Maharaj came in. He sat in front of Prabhupada's desk, leaning on the corner with his elbow, quite casually, I thought. Prabhupada pleasantly asked him, so, what is the difference between the two groups? It was an indication that if there were any differences between ISKCON and Siddha's group, why not, while he's here, work to clear them up so that everybody can cooperate? Siddhasarupa simply lowered his head, his bottom lip protruding, and ignored the overture. Well, Prabhupada, he pouted, I think Krishna will decide who's right and who's wrong. Telling Prabhupada that. He seems to be completely negative to any proposal for cooperation, even from his own spiritual master. Over the last few days, Srila Prabhupada has been requesting the temple leaders to construct a new building on the side of our land. Despite Siddha's attitude, Prabhupada attempted to encourage him in the new to participate in the new project. He said that whatever differences existed could be resolved on the common platform of chanting the holy names of the Lord. But still, Siddhasarupa merely invented one excuse after another why he could not participate. So even Prabhupada was inviting him, he was saying, oh, but you know, this is, he just wouldn't do it. So if somebody's really determined like that, there's not much that you can do about it. So then February the 12th, 1977, here in Mayapur, this topic of Siddhasarupa's group again came up. So Tushta Krishna, so Prabhupada called me in. I'm not exactly sure what prompted this. I'd have to look it up in my diary. But anyway, the topic came up about Siddhasarupa and Tushta Krishna. So first of all, Prabhupada, he called me and he asked me, so what do they say about ISKCON and how do they operate themselves? So I explained to him what I had heard from some of our men in New Zealand. Yasamati Nandan Das, who was the president there when Prabhupada visited last year, is here now in Mayapur with Guru Kripa's Namhata party. I told Prabhupada how they preach anti-ISKCON, and the tendency is to take advantage of the encouragement that Prabhupada gives them to advertise that what they are doing is authorized by him, and that generally they preach that ISKCON is just some professional organization, but they are the real authorized Sankirtan movement. This was actually the, we're the real chanters. ISKCON's just some, you know, it's a business. That was their thing. He was not happy at all to hear how they were preaching against ISKCON. I explained that sometimes our devotees leave our temple due to weakness in following the principles, and then they join Tushta, and then they become confused as to what is actually authorized or not. Prabhupada cut in sharply. That is your fault if they are confused, because you have not managed things properly, therefore they become confused. If you are not responsible, then there must be confusion. And he spoke strongly for about 5 or 10 minutes, how if we preach in a proper manner, then there'll be no confusion. At the end I asked, well, the thing is, Srila Prabhupada, should we regard them as being authorized? Prabhupada immediately and emphatically stated, they are not authorized, but because they are chanting, I am trying to encourage them. His ultimate conclusion was that we should avoid them, but that we should allow them to come for festivals and come to the temple to see the deities for chanting and prasadam. He said he was thinking that if he encouraged them, then they would become a little purified. But now, he said, it seems as if they are simply taking advantage. So that was that was that one. So even Srila Prabhupada was not able to resolve that conflict, although he was always trying, and it was always on the basis of, you know, chanting, that if they were chanting the holy names, gradually they'd become purified. Of course, after Prabhupada's disappearance, they completely went off in another direction. They're still operating. They have some kind of, what is it, the Australian Meditation Society or something like that. And he's quite big in Poland. He has about 8 centers in Poland. But he went on later on. He became so paranoid about his group being identified with ISKCON, because we were known as the Hare Krishna movement. Yeah, so he became so paranoid that he invented his own Maha Mantra. So they don't even chant Hare Krishna. Or if they do, they keep it in private. But he made up this mantra, and when they go out in public, or they used to, I don't know whether they even do that now, they sing this, you know, Shri Krishna Govinda, Hey Radhi, Marari, something, something, whatever. He just made up his own mantra, so that he wouldn't be identified with the Hare Krishna movement. So Krishna there, obviously confusing his brain a little bit. Okay, so then the other major conflict that was going on in 75 and 76, I mentioned briefly before, was the sannyasis versus grihasthas fight. And it was getting to be a real fight. It had been building up for the whole of 75. It was mainly due to the Radha Damodar party. They were traveling throughout America with 7 or 8 Greyhound buses, 100 brahmacharis, 12 maxi vans, and because they were hitting every city in America and selling books like anything. So Prabhupada was really pleased with that. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in charge. And, you know, in those days he was a really heavy dude. They used to call him the hot tamale. And he was a very, very heavy guy. So what was happening was that, you know, the Radha Damodar boys would rock into some town somewhere. If there was a temple, they would stay there, or maybe they would stay on their own bus. And then if there were any brahmacharis in the local temple, then they'd get in their ears. Because most temples, the temple presidents were grihasthas. So the Radha Damodar boys, they would get in their ears and say, you know, why don't you come with us? We're traveling all over the, you know, on the buses. It's, you know, it's fabulous fun. We're selling so many books. All your collections are just going to support some grihastha. They should all be out, you know, working and earning a living. They're just living off the brahmacharis like this. So there was all this, you know, agitation going on. So there were a few incidences that, you know, when the Radha Damodar bus came into town, when it left, then some of the temple brahmacharis left with it. But not with anybody's permission. You know, there were even some instances of them throwing their belongings out the window at midnight and climbing out the window and going off to join the bus like that. So it became a big, big, you know, agitation. And it got to the point where the sannyasis on the Radha Damodar party were being banned from entering some of the temples. You know, so then there's like this cursing and counter-cursing business going on. And it got so bad that Tamal Krishna Maharaj actually flew all the way to India to see Srila Prabhupada to ask what to do about it. Because he was very strong about his points. You know, the grihasthas are, you know, really just not renounced enough. The temples should just be for the renunciates. The grihasthas should all live outside, whatever. So Prabhupada heard him out, and then he told him, just go back and preach. Just do your book distribution, you know, keep on preaching, everything will resolve. So after he left, he flew in, he spent one day, half a day, with Prabhupada in Vrindavan to make his complaints, and then he went back again. Prabhupada said, just see, he spent so much money, come for one day just to complain about a bunch of grihasthas. Anyway, but he didn't step in and he didn't say anything about it. So it kept on building up. That was like September time, I think, 75. Then by the time the festival came up in 76 here in Mayapur, the whole thing was just, you know, building up and building up and building up, and neither, you know, side was giving way. Because it was mainly Tamal Krishna Maharaj that was pushing, you know, the kind of heavy renunciation thing. And whenever Prabhupada spoke with him, Tamal would make his points, and Prabhupada would say, yes, very good. Yeah, good, like that. And then he would go away, you know. And then somebody else from the other side would come and they would talk, and Prabhupada would say, yes, very good, yeah, good. And he wasn't making any decision about it. He was just, you know, letting it percolate. So there was a morning walk. This was there was quite a few discussions. I haven't put them all down here. But to get to our point about chanting. So on March the 10th, 1976, then we were walking down the main road here. It was like a seesaw, one party accusing the other. Prabhupada had done the same thing that he did with Siddha Sarup. He said, all right, now if there's some disagreement, let us talk about it. So he had them, you know, making their different points. So it was like a seesaw, one party accusing the other. And the last thing Prabhupada wanted was to see the formation of different factions. He said that the whole world is full of different isms, one party against the other. We should not bring that attitude into our society. He said the accusations of one side against the other are all fanaticism. He gave the solution. Real unity is in advancing in Krishna consciousness. In Kali Yuga, he said, you cannot strictly follow, neither I can strictly follow. If I criticize you, if you criticize me, then we go far away from our real life of Krishna consciousness. You should always remember that either grihastha or brahmachari or sannyasi, nobody can strictly follow all of the rules and regulations of them. In the Kali Yuga, it is not possible. So if I find simply fault with you, and you find fault with me, then it will be factional, and our real business will be hampered. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended, Harinama, you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and that should be very rigidly performed, which is common for everyone, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. So they should always chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and then everything will be adjusted. Otherwise, it is impossible to advance, and we shall be complicated with the details only. On the whole, throughout the discussions, Prabhupada has naturally lent his support to the more renounced position. Yet he obviously wants everybody to have the chance to develop their Krishna consciousness. He said that we should neither neglect the regulations nor pursue them so fanatically that we miss the point of actual spiritual advancement. He repeated the real formula for success. If we advance in Krishna consciousness, the simple method, chanting 24 hours, Kirtaniya Sada Hari, then things will be automatically adjusted. You cannot find in Kali Yuga everything is being done very correctly and to the point. That is very difficult. So that was his approach to it. And of course, eventually that was corrected. It came to a head after the GBC meetings because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was made the GBC chairman for that year. So they passed a number of resolutions whereby it said that any Grihastha, even if he was a temple president, he had to get a job and support himself, and he was not allowed to take any money from the temple for his support, even if he was the temple president. And then no single women were allowed to stay in the temples. And like that, there were several other resolutions. So then the next day after, and the standard then was that the meetings usually took about 3 or 4 days maximum. And then every evening after the GBC had met, they would come in and they would read out the resolutions that they'd passed for that day to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would listen, and he would correct them or he would approve them. So they read these resolutions out, Prabhupada said, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there, you know, giving some explanation on these new strictures that they'd introduced. And he explained it, you know, it was all for improving the, you know, renunciation and the brahmachari standards and like this. And Prabhupada said, yes, okay. So he let them go. And then the next day or a couple of days later, they were posted. And then some of the temple presidents saw what the GBC had decided, and then they flipped. So then there was a big commotion. They all got together. And as a result, then they got Jayadvaita, who was a brahmachari at that time, but he was sympathetic to their side. They got him to come in and speak with Srila Prabhupada. And there were a few of the GBC that also were, you know, not actually comfortable with the resolutions that they passed. So in the end, everybody got into Prabhupada's room. And then there was a big discussion. And then at the end of it, then Prabhupada preached very nicely. And he said, now he said, you know, anybody, Grihastha, Brahmachari, Sannyasi, everybody is preaching. He said they should all be given the facility. He said, not that we're picking on one side or another. He said, it is not the dress. He said, actually in ISKCON, everybody is a sannyasi because everybody's preaching. So he said, now he said, these resolutions, what was it? Resolution, revolution, dissolution, no solution. He said, now you strike all these revolutionary resolutions like this and you go back and... So then they did that. So then several of them were struck out. And then everybody was happy and it was resolved. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was sent to China. But that's another story. Krishna's arrangement on that one. But anyway, so Prabhupada's point there is, you know, should be well taken. That if you want to get down into fault finding, you'll always find fault. Because in Kali Yuga, nobody can do anything perfectly. It's not possible, neither Grihasthas or Brahmacharis or Sannyasis. So therefore, you know, although you can't get so slack you don't have any standards, at the same time you can't be so fanatical, you know, that nobody can follow the standards. So he said the common platform then is you have to just rely on chanting the holy names. And that will rectify anything. If there is some imperfection, gradually it will be cleansed out just by, you know, the common platform of chanting. So as a result of that then, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was feeling defeated. He felt that, you know, he'd lost his position there. And then Prabhupada, of course, told him that he had to go to China to preach. It kind of removed him out of the immediate, you know, conflict zone of America. That Radha Damodar was handed over to the hands of some of his men. It just happened that that year also, the other leader of the Radha Damodar, of course, was Vishnu Janaswamy. And he was very, very popular. He was a great kirtan leader, very charismatic. Many people regard him as being, you know, very elevated personality. And he disappeared. In the last day of the festival, Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to see Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada, Vishnu Janaswamy has not been seen for the last 3 or 4 days. Nobody knows where he is. His danda is still in the room. All his belongings are there. He's just gone. So Prabhupada's reaction was very muted. He didn't seem to be overly concerned about it. He said, well, he said, if he doesn't want to serve, then what can be done? And that was it. And then off he was never seen again. He just, you know, vanished. Later on, the following year, it was put to Srila Prabhupada that some people in Allahabad had reported seeing some tall Western sadhu, and he had taken a boat out into the middle of the river and jumped into the river and never came out. So that, you know, they felt that he'd committed suicide. And initially Prabhupada was doubtful about that report, but later on in 77, then he, because Vishnu Jan had not been seen for well over a year by that time, then Prabhupada finally said, well, okay, then maybe that's true. So then he was asked, well, what will happen to him? He said, then he'll be in the heavenly planets. He'll be preaching. He said, it's good, actually, because he's a sannyasi. So if he's done that, that's all right. So that was it. Anyway, so you can imagine the situation for the Radha Damodar boys. They were the most powerful preaching group in ISKCON at that time. They were selling, I mean, they were putting $50,000 a month into the BBT. They were selling 20,000 books a month. I mean, doing amazing preaching work. And then all of a sudden, their two main leaders were just removed from them. Anyway, so many of them had come to Mayapur for the 76 festival. I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, had the intention that he was going to make a show, you know, he was going to have a show of force. All his brahmacharis were going to be there just in case the grihasthas got too rowdy. Anyway, the boys were all there. And so after everything was resolved, then on March the 16th, which it may have been Gaupunima Day, I have to check that. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj arranged for a special darshan for all, just the Radha Damodar brahmacharis. So they all came and crowded into Prabhupada's room. They were sitting on the, you know, veranda on either side. So glancing affectionately at the bright youthful faces, Prabhupada declared, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's soldiers to fight with Maya. And they all cheered back, Jai Prabhupada. Prabhupada went on to explain that cooperation is the essence of the movement. Quoting a line from Awe Vaishnav Thakur, he told them, the purport of the verse is that even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is God himself, Krishna himself, he felt, alone, unable to do this task. So, what is the position? You are cooperating, and therefore I am getting the credit. Otherwise, alone, what could I do? Ekaki amara nahi pai bol. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself wanted our cooperation. He is God, Krishna. Therefore, cooperation is a very important thing. Nobody should think that, oh, I've got so great ability, I can do. No, it is simply by cooperation that we can do a big thing. United we stand, divided we fall. So be strong in pushing Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will help. He is the strongest. Still, we must be combined together. Sankirtan means many men combined together, chanting. That is Sankirtan. Otherwise, Kirtan. Bahubi Militva Kirtayeti Sankirtan. Bahu means many. Many combined together. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Combine together. All nations, all persons, they should combine together. There is hope in our society. Combination. There are Hindus, there are Muslims, there are Christians, they're black, white. Combine them. That looks very beautiful. just like a combination of flowers. Bringing the darshan to a close, Prabhupada glorified them with a few final words of praise. Hare Krishna, all glories to the Sankirtan party, Radha Damodar. So that was very significant, that what Prabhupada said there. Just stressing again and again, you can't do anything. Even Lord Chaitanya couldn't do it without cooperation. Prabhupada himself said, I was just loitering in the streets in New York. He said, you were also loitering. He said, I couldn't do anything alone, you couldn't do anything alone. He said, but when we combine together, he said, it's like the man in one place, he found a pumpkin gourd. And in another place, he found a piece of wood. And in another place, he found a wire. So he said, when he combined them together, he made a very nice musical instrument. And he was able to make some nice music. So he said, similarly, I was loitering on the streets, you were loitering on the streets. He said, but now, combined together, we can do something very nice. So this good point, Sankirtan means many men together, otherwise it's Kirtan. If your only consideration is Kirtan, you can do that by yourself. But if it's Sankirtan, which is Lord Chaitanya's movement, it must be together, all combined together. Just a final point on this thing that Prabhupada was saying about, you know, Kali Yuga, and how everything has some fault. It's not possible to do things perfectly. So on October the 23rd, 1976, in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was giving his class, briefly describing each of the four basic miseries. He gave a nice example of what it means to live in Kali Yuga. He said, a man is suffering from itches or sores all over the body. So, where shall he give the ointment? He should be dipped in the ointment. So this is the position. Similarly, how much you will find out, oh, this is faulty, this is faulty, this is faulty. The life in Kali Yuga itself is faulty. Everything is faulty. And he stated the solution. But still, Krishna is so kind. He has given us an opportunity that by chanting his holy name, one can become freed from this faulty position. Kirtanad avi krishnasya mukta sangam param vijet. It is possible. So that's the solution. Just chant, that's all. Keep chanting and don't stop. Any questions up to this point? Or comments? No questions? Alright, I'm just skipping it. We've done this section already, chant and conquer death. George Harrison. Okay, chanting keeps away the ghosts. January the 18th, 1976, Prabhupada was here in Mayapur. He'd just arrived the day before. So in the early evening, just on dusk, a few of the senior devotees and myself were sitting with Prabhupada in his room, conversing. From a distance, and gradually drawing nearer, we heard the loud trumpeting of a conch shell, accompanied by bell ringing and the chanting of mantras. Bhavananda Maharaj laughed, and he told Prabhupada that it was Anantaram Shastri, an Indian devotee in his mid-twenties who had joined us last year with three other Shastris. Unfortunately, the others had left, but he has stayed on. As his name implies, he is very knowledgeable in the scriptures and well-versed in the performance of various types of puja. He can also quote practically any Sanskrit verse from memory. Bhavananda explained that each evening as the sun goes down, he tours the building floor by floor, that means the lotus building, with a bell, a conch, and a large clay incense burner, chanting various mantras to keep away ghosts and other subtle beings, because that's when they become active at sunset. The sound grew louder, and Prabhupada smiled in welcome as Shastri entered his room in a cloud of frankincense, the reverberations of the conch temporarily drowning out our conversation. It was an impressive ritual, made more so by Shastri's ability to both blow air out through his mouth and suck it in through his nose at the same time, thus keeping the conch blowing uninterruptedly for several minutes. So he had this, I think they say that saxophone players can do this. You can breathe in through your nose and blow out through your mouth at the same time. So that way they can keep, you know, the tune going. So he was doing that with his conch shell. Like this, breathing in and out really fast. His cheeks were, you know, puffing in and out, and the conch was just blowing and blowing and blowing at, you know, maximum vibrations. So it was nice. So he walked around both rooms, waving a bamboo fan over his clay bowl to disperse the fragrant smoke. It also acts as an effective mosquito repellent. After a couple of minutes, he respectfully backed out of the room and continued his nightly rounds. The puja triggered Prabhupada's remembrance of his time in Allahabad in 1945. He told us that he was paying only 200 rupees for a whole house, but the place was famous as a ghostly haunted house. Nobody would rent it, but Prabhupada took it. "I don't care for ghosts," he said, smiling. "Actually, there was a ghost, and all the servants, they were met, but I was chanting." Prabhupada didn't care. And because when Prabhupada went to England for the first time, he was staying at Bhaktivedanta Manor. He was staying at Tittenhurst, which was John Lennon's estate. This was before they got the manor. And the gardener there was having a problem, apparently, with ghosts in some building there. And he was getting very disturbed by it. So apparently Prabhupada went in there and he was waving his cane like this and chasing them out. He didn't care. He was completely, you know, not bothered at all by the idea of ghosts. And I had a little experience here in Mayapur in 77. I was asleep and then I had this very, very vivid dream. And I dreamt that I was in the basement of the Melbourne Temple. Of course, dreams are always a little different from reality. There is no basement in the Melbourne Temple. it's a very tiny little place. But in the dream, it was like a big room. And I came in, and I immediately understood there's a ghost in this room. And as soon as I registered that the ghost was there, he immediately... there was a sink on the left-hand side of the room, and he immediately turned the taps on full bore, so all the water was pouring down. And I got very angry, and I was thinking, this demon, he's wasting Krishna's energy like that. So I ran forward to shut the taps off. So as soon as I shut the taps off, then there was at the other end of the room, there was a cooker, gas cooker. So I immediately turned on the burners, and they were, you know, all the gas was burning. So then I ran over to switch off the burners. So when I went over to switch the burners off, as I'm turning the handles, he came up behind me and then he started pushing me into the flames. So as my head was going into the flames, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to get burnt. So I started chanting. So I chanted Hare Krishna like this. And then when I chanted Hare Krishna, because I was doing it with the conviction that as soon as I chanted Hare Krishna, you know, the ghost will go away. But actually, the opposite happened. And as soon as I chanted Hare Krishna, he got really, really angry. And I could feel him behind me. He was like getting ferocious because I was chanting Hare Krishna. And then for just a half a second, I thought, the chanting's not working. And then I thought, no, that's ridiculous. You know, Krishna is the supreme, it has to work. And when I thought like that, then he got really ferocious. So then I noticed that although my head was in the flames, I wasn't getting burnt. So I realized Krishna was protecting me. So all of this, you know, was going on, like on the mental level. And then the ghost, of course, could understand my thoughts. So he got really, really angry at that point because he realized that I was taking shelter in Krishna. So then, he got more ferocious. So then at that point, I thought, all right, I've got to get rid of this. So then I just burst out chanting the Nisringadev prayers. So I chanted them so loudly that I woke myself up because I was asleep. The whole thing was a dream. But I shouted out, Namaste, like this. And I woke up hearing myself chanting. So I thought, you know, what was that? Was that a dream or was it an actual ghost or what? We're in Mayapur, you know. I didn't know at that time, you know, there could be ghosts in the dam. So then later on when I went into Prabhupada's room, then I described the dream to him and I asked him, I said, what was that? Was that a dream or was there actually a ghost? So Prabhupada said, well, he said it could be either. He said, there are ghosts in the dams. He said, anyway, he said, it's good that you chanted. So that was it. And, of course, there's a lot of instances of chanting. These are not when I was with Prabhupada, but a lot of instances of chanting to Lord Nisringadev by many devotees when they were out on Sankirtan and met with some, you know, difficult situations. My godbrother Yasamati Nandan, he told me that one time they were in downtown Adelaide and they were chanting there on a Saturday night. The temple in those days in Adelaide was just off the main street actually, at one end. So you just had to walk out the door and you go around the corner, you were on the main street. But they have a lot of pubs all the way down and that was like where all the people go for the nightclubs and things like that. And for some reason or another, Adelaide was always, although it's a small city, we always got a lot of problems there, physically. People would attack us, you know, we'd get in fights, they'd come around and bash the door in on the temple and things like this. So this particular Saturday night was no difference. The devotees had gone out, there was only about maybe five or six of them, because we only had a small temple. And Yaso told me afterwards, he said he was playing the drum, I think. And then this whole drunken gang of louts, they all came around and they started abusing them and then, you know, making fun of them. And then they started, you know, one of them stubbed a cigarette out on the hand of one of the devotees that was playing the kartals. And like that, they were getting really, really aggressive. So Yaso said he was leading. So he said at a certain point, he realized, you know, it's going to get really bad. So he said he just suddenly started chanting the Nisringa prayers. He said as soon as he started chanting the Nisringa prayers, he said something happened. He said it was like almost like a ghost, but he swore. He said, I saw a lion's face come right from behind me. He said, and all these boys, they just suddenly got completely afraid and they ran. They actually ran away from the Sankirtan party. And the devotees just carried on chanting and like that. And they weren't bothered for the rest of the night. So I also had a personal experience, something similar to that. I was out at Bondi Junction selling books. I was just there by myself. And then, I was on the street corner and then this guy came up. He was a bit bigger than me. And he was wearing workman's clothing. He was off some building site. So he'd seen me there selling books. So he walked up and he starts talking to me. And initially he was trying to make out like, oh, what you got there? Let me see your book. But then very quickly he started getting really nasty. And he started, you know, swearing at me and calling me names. And what are you doing out here? You're just disturbing people. You're just ripping people off you, this and that, like this. And every time I just started to walk away and ignore him, and then, you know, I was trying to approach people on the street to sell him a book, and he would step right in between us and say, don't let this, you know, person disturb you, madam. You know, he's a bit crazy or like that. So he was interfering with the book selling. And so I kept trying to walk away, but he wouldn't go. So he kept, you know, for about 10 minutes, he was walking up and down the pavement behind me. And he was getting more and more aggressive because, yeah, he was trying to provoke me, but I wouldn't be provoked. So he was getting more aggressive to try to get some reaction so that he could beat me up. So at a certain point when he got really nasty and he really started swearing at me heavily, then at that point I just realized this guy's not going to go away until he's, you know, until he's clotted me. So I thought the only thing I could do is I'm just going to have to pray to Lord Nisringadev. So I just, you know, I was in the middle of the street, and at the top of my voice I just suddenly burst out, Namaste Nisringaya, like this, and I sang the whole mantra. And as soon as I did it, he went, what are you doing? Like this. And then I just ignored him, and I finished the prayers, and I looked around, and he'd gone. He just vanished. And I never saw him again. It was quite amazing. I really got a lot of faith in Lord Nisringadev after that one. Anyway, so that's a few stories about ghosts and a sideline on chanting to Lord Nisringadev. Another kind of ghostly haunted people that can be cured by chanting. This was on April the 13th, 1976 in Bombay. Prabhupada had been on a morning walk, and there was a student then. His name was Punjabi Premananda. And he used to come out sometimes on the morning walks. And after that morning's walk, he sent Prabhupada a letter. So he is studying for his BA in philosophy and psychology, and he wanted to know how he could keep his mind fixed in Krishna consciousness. He added a telling comment, a confirmation of Prabhupada's many remarks about the unfortunate condition of the youth of India. He said, I find so much opposition when I just mention about Krishna or try to tell them about Krishna consciousness to my college friends. They simply criticize and they say, oh, you are a bore. You're always boring us. Why do you speak about the otherworldly? So then Prabhupada replied other points in his letter. And then on the last point, Prabhupada gave him the simple, straightforward method for remembering Krishna. Simply chant. Your associates are harassing you for your interest in spiritual culture, he said. Yes, that is due to India's great misfortune. They are impressed with so-called politicians and scholars of the modern age. The example is given in this connection that when a man is ghostly haunted, he speaks all nonsense. At the present moment, they are all ghostly haunted, and in this delirious condition, the only cure is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So that's another kind of ghost, being ghostly haunted. Okay, it's nearly 10 to 7. Any questions or comments?